Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is, we're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day, and I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So, go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Calling all property owners and operators. Are you managing a multifamily property and looking to elevate your residents' living experience? Introducing Quantum Fiber Internet, your go-to choice for speedy internet your residents will love. The process is as seamless as Quantum Fiber service. Starting at just $50 a month, your residents can enjoy fast, reliable internet that will make them love where they live even more. Connect with your local fiber representative today. Learn more at q.com/gobig. I wonder how they got that domain. That's q.com/gobig. Limited availability. Service and rate in select locations only. Taxes and fees apply. 360 Wi-Fi and other equipment lease charges, taxes, and fees are excluded from price for life offer and may be increased. Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. And BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners' capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com.
This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 240.
If you just go out and you want it so badly, like it'll somehow, some way, somebody will come in your life or you'll figure it out and it'll happen. Just go after and do it.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Brandon Turner.
The crowd goes wild.
Ah, yay.
Wow.
What's up?
Not much. How are you doing? Right?
How was that? That was
a really good introduction. That was about the best I've ever got.
Wow.
Usually it's like, here comes Brandon, that one guy that
enjoy
here.
It. Yeah. Well,
anyway, what's new?
Anyway. What's up, man? Yeah, this is the second show since I'm back from my great adventure. Yeah, man, things are going well. Got a cool show with a young, just hungry dude this morning. We just chatted with. And I love these shows. I love talking to folks who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s and so on, but like the guys in their 20s, I don't know. Yeah. For me, they feed me. They feed my motivational
passion
or something. Yeah, man. Just seeing somebody who's like so young with so little experience who can just say, so to speak, balls to the wall and just kind of like do it, right? Yep. Just all out. I'm going to figure this out. you know, I want to get into this. Here's why. And they just go and do it because I think over age and we develop these fears, right? You know, if you attachments, fears, things like that. And when you're young, you don't really have that as much.
Yeah.
I mean, like now, if I were like, hey, Brandon, you know, let's get up and leave, you know, get up and leave your small part of town while your wife and your kids used to the church and that, 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 and you get all these things, right?
Yeah.
Your ties.
When you're young, you're just like, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. Why not?
Yep.
So it's cool. And anyway, but besides the fact that he's young, he is out there killing it,
hustling.
He's got some fantastic ideas. So here's a great show for everybody. But yeah, things are good, man. How about you? How's your life? How's your wife?
Wife, life, baby, so good. Rosie is learning to talk, and so she's using new words every couple of days, like little things. It's fun.
Nice.
Man, you weren't lying. Being a dad is fun.
Does she know Josh yet?
She does not know that. She knows a-hole.
Wow. What?
No, she doesn't know that. She doesn't know anything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was the PG version right there.
What just happened?
I don't know. So let's bring in today's...
I feel like there's some animus here, Brandon. What have I done?
You've been a good friend, and that's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
Let's get to today's.
I hope that's good.
I'm going to the quick tip. Quick tip!
I got a quick tip, unless you have one.
Please. It's all you.
All right. Today's quick tip is I'm still like reeling here, Brandon. This whole like Rosie a-hole thing is it's tripping me up. It's breaking my heart a little bit here. So today's quick tip, we have begun to roll out what we have dubbed our content hubs. We have begun to roll out these content hubs. We have a new nav that we're testing out on Bigger Pockets, and what we've done is we realize that our users are looking for knowledge. They're looking for information. And, you know, over time, we've always said, oh, you want to learn something? You got to go to the forums. Hey, you want to learn something? You got to go here. The challenge is people learn different things in different ways. So Brandon, you could bang him on the head 100 times. He's not going to learn a damn thing.
That's true.
But you, listener A, may like to learn things through video. You, listener B, are a podcast guy only. You, listener C, might be a blog person. So what we did was we went through all of our content in Bigger Pockets, and that is no small undertaking.
Yeah.
There is a massive, massive millions of forum posts, tens of thousands of blog posts, and we've categorized them and labeled them. And now what we're doing is we said, hey, our users are going to find this information valuable if they can find everything kind of categorically. And so we've begun to really test that. And so thus we have these content hubs on our new nav. If you go to our education dropdown, you'll see we've got property management, finance, strategy, finding deals and hubs. There's going to be more and more and more hubs over time, and they're going to get better over time because we're going to get to know what people like, what people find valuable, what they don't find valuable. So check out those content hubs. Let us know what you think. Jump on the forums, biggerpockets.com/forums, and leave us some feedback on those hubs. Test them out, play with them. And that's today's quick tip.
That wasn't so quick.
I tend to ramble.
You know what? You might. But today's show is not about Josh and his rambling. Today's show is about real estate.
So we have a great show today. This is show 240 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. Check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show240. Today's guest is Brenton Hess, a man in his young 20s who is out there killing it, flipping houses, building a portfolio. He's building his own network, which is really cool. All about building a cool, better life and better financial lives. But at the end of the day, he's got a great story. He has some great ideas, and he's somebody that we can all learn from. So take a listen. All right, Brenton, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Sweet, sweet. So I first met you back in January, I think it was, or February up in Whistler. We were at the GoBundance event, and that was cool. But it was good to get to kind of know you, and I learned a little bit about you then, but I didn't get to like dive in real deep in your story. So that's why I was excited to, you know, invite you on the show here and get talking to you. So with that, let's get to it. How did you get into real estate? I mean, you're younger. How old are you right now?
I am 24.
24. Just you might turned. Be. Oh. Is he the youngest we've had on the show? I don't know if we've had it.
I don't know.
No, we had.
I think Devin, like 22-year-old.
Yeah, I think maybe Devin might have been a little. Anyway, you're a young guy and you're crushing it in real estate and in business and in life, and you're doing a lot of really good stuff. So how did you get the idea even of getting into real estate? Walk through the beginning of that. Josh is bringing a book across the screen. All right, walk sure. us through your journey. And how did you get started with that first deal?
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I got my real estate license at 19 years old when I was in college. Why, it was one of those things where over winter break, I heard you can get your real estate license in 2 weeks. So I went ahead and knocked it out online. I grabbed it. And honestly, I didn't do anything with it the first 2 years. And it wasn't until I heard about this thing. Well, I honestly looked at both things. I looked at sales and then real estate investing. And when I looked at both, I realized, well, I wouldn't be so passionate about sales because of it's being so transactional, in the sense of you do it and then you got to do it again, do it again. And I have family in real estate. They own a brokerage and they've always been in sales. No one I've known has been into real estate investing. In fact, a lot of the people inside of real estate sales, a lot of realtors out there don't even get into investing. So you would think that off the gate, I would have a leg up. In fact, I had never thought about investing. I had never even swung a hammer before. So I literally started from scratch, no experience, no mentors inside this space whatsoever. And then it wasn't until I was running around the office at 21 years old saying, hey, who wants to flip houses or who wants to invest in real estate? And I have a great friend, Stu, who said, hey, I have a lot of money and not a lot of time. And I said, awesome, because I have negative dollars. I have college debt and I have a ton of time. So maybe let's do something. So we brought in another buddy of mine from home, Josh, and the three of us, we went ahead and came across our first deal. And that story in itself is probably one of the greatest learning lessons of all time.
Oh, good. Wow.
Yeah, ready for it?
Well, no, I'm not ready for it. I got to ask questions already. Hold on. Curiosity, man. So, all right. So we got you, we got Stu, and we got Joshy Boy. And the three of you are coming together. Your role, Stu's the money guy. You're the, I don't know, guy. And what is Josh do? So what are the roles? And then how are you guys coming together? What does that look like?
Sure. When it originally came about, it was Stu was the money. Josh would be running the operations, the renovations and overseeing the project. And I would be more of the accounting side. And it didn't stay that way. In fact, we bought the house. And in the first week, we didn't do anything, really. We just okay, now what? We met in the living room and we went and bought some paint and started rolling it out ourselves. And we looked around and just said, all right, this can't be right. This is not what the best people in the business are doing. So that's when I said, okay, having no relationships, no experience, let's build it. And we used that as our first stepping stone to finding contractors, managing them. And it's so funny because both Josh and Stu left to go on vacation for 2 weeks, right in the beginning of the project, as soon as we got rolling. So I was there with the contractors on summer break of college, just learning with what they told me. In fact, they would give me that long materials list. I would go to the Home Depot or Lowe's, and that's how I would learn exactly what materials were needed. And it was quite the learning curve. It still is.
What was that like dealing with contractors at a young age? I mean, you're 21 years old at this point, and you're dealing with contractors that are probably way older than you. What was that like?
Yeah. Intimidating, number one, because everything that they're saying, you're just nodding to and shaking your head and you're like, yep. Mm. And then you go to the store and you have no idea what they said and you can't read their handwriting.
Yep.
So it was challenging because I would always feel as if they're pulling one over on me. We didn't have any relationships prior to this and I wouldn't know what's right or what's wrong when pricing. So all of that combined, it was just like me going to the store, asking others, what do you think about this? I remember, and it's funny because it actually kind of ruins you in a way, because I went to the store and I said, I need that thing that goes in the bottom of a bathroom. As soon as you walk in, you step over it. And the guy is like, a threshold? And I'm like, yeah, I think. What does that look like? Can you show me? And it now, you walk into a bathroom, you see all these materials because you've been through the journey or you've been through that experience of having to buy them yourself and then bring them back to the house at 11 o'clock at night, unloading your car.
You know what I think a lot of success comes down to in a lot of things in life is how willing you are to look stupid sometimes, because a lot of people would have said, you know, I don't know what that's called. I'm too afraid to go look stupid. So I'm going to sit on my couch and watch TV every night until I'm dead. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't know, I commend you for the fact that you went, you're like, I'm going to go look stupid and be at Home Depot, not sure what I'm doing. I think that's awesome.
Thanks. In fact, for this podcast, I kind of went into it. I'm thinking, you know what, let me just share all my vulnerabilities and look very stupid so that, you know, so that others can learn.
We don't have enough time for that.
we don't have enough time. No. So kind of like where my story kind of goes full circle is I started flipping in college and I coined myself the phrase of I flipped my way out of college debt because, you know, 15 flips later, I had, you know, through that journey, it was the money that I got through flipping that I was able to pay off my college loans. And I left my full-time job to pursue real estate investing full-time. So it all began with that very first deal, you know, and there was a time in that first deal where I just wanted to stop and I wanted to quit. I didn't want to do it anymore. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's amazing what happens when you look back on things, because in the moment, I just had no idea where things were headed. Now, looking back 3.5 years later, it's been quite the journey. A lot of fun stories.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So before we dive in on that first deal, where are you today? Like what have you done in the few years that you have been doing this? And then we'll start diving into that first deal some more.
Cool. Yep. So right now I have flipped or in the process of 15 properties and I am solo now at this point, running my own operations, branding my own business. And I also own 11 units with 50-50 with a business partner. And those are three units and two singles. And I'm also under contract to buy two more, and that would be solely owned for me. So at this point in the game, I am building out the systems. Now that I'm solo, I'm building out the systems and hiring an assistant and going through those motions that this can be more scalable rather than like a one-off or a hobby or while you're in college kind of thing. So it's like that exponential part.
Where are you in the country?
I am in Maryland.
Okay. Cool.
Interesting. All right. Well, so I want to bring up, I know I want to go way back, but just the fact that you mentioned this right now is something that I've been talking about a lot lately with friends of mine, in real estate friends of mine, this idea that, like, you mentioned something about it's not, you're trying to build systems so you can repeat it, right? Because like one deal doesn't really matter that much. I mean, a lot of people really worry about getting that first deal and they fret a lot about it, but like one single house doesn't really change a life, like change financial freedom, right? It's more about like, what are you learning? Are you building the systems to be able to repeat it or go larger or scale or whatever? So I think that's cool that you look at it from that perspective. It's not just about I'm just trying to get through college to do this couple of deals, but you're building the business.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And in fact, it wasn't something I looked at my own business and said, oh, I need these operations manuals and I need these systems. And I just talked to others who are just killing it, many of which have been on your show. And even you can hear it from your show, like people can break down their systems for you because that is what's going to kind of, you know, all boats rise with that same tide. Like this is like, you know, the BP tide, like let's all in the forums, it's all there. Yeah, I mean, baby. People have the systems.
The BP tide. About. I like it.
Tide.
That's very cool.
BP tide.
The BP tide. Yeah. You coined it. I like that. So let's talk about like that very first deal. I want to go back to that again and talk about some of the things like what went, well, first of all, what did you buy that for? Do you remember what you bought it for, what you sold it for, the numbers? And then like what went right? What went wrong? What'd you learn?
Sure. Yep. So I bought it for 121 and I sold it for 205, put $34,000 into it. And it was like a $29,000 return, which was right around 17% ROI. Okay. And it was in 2014. That was a time where, you know, I would look at that deal and I'd say, okay, I probably could have made another 15 or 20K out of it, knowing what I know now. And they weren't that hard to find as hard as they are now. So in the sense of like looking back on it, would have done so many other different things and could have made a lot more money. But you know, that was the first deal. That's where all the stories kind of lie.
Yeah. So
how long did that flip take?
So that flip took 4.5 months. It was pretty quick. It wasn't that big of a project that you could see from the renovation standpoint. And how we found it was, the same way, I mean, talk about your community, the same way I found my partner, Stu, just running around the office talking about what I'm up to, an agent in our office had a listing coming up where the seller needed to just sell the house, needed to sell it because the bank was going to take the keys in 3 weeks. So he's like, oh, you guys have cash? You can buy it. Let's do it.
Wow. That's awesome. Nice. You never know. Great. I mean, that's another reason why it's so important to network with agents. Like, just build up good friendships and relations with other agents. Be known as somebody, hey, I can close on this thing quickly. Kind of build that reputation. I think that's awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the first deal was a success. Did you guys split it like three ways, or how did you guys end up working that?
Yeah, we wound up splitting profits three ways.
Okay.
And that partnership wrote out like six or seven flips. It was a very great time. And what we realized is that we all want to go in different directions. And that's what we did.
Okay. That makes sense. And go ahead.
I was going to say, back to Brandon's question on what went right and what went wrong on that property.
Sure. Okay. So let's start with what went wrong. What went wrong is we celebrated too much about getting a deal that we didn't even line up contractors or bids or talk about what we were doing. Like, we just told everybody we were getting a deal and we're flipping a house. And then the day we bought it, we're like, oh crap. We need to figure out what to actually do. So the whole, I guess you would call it like the prehab process, like the pre-rehab process, like everything involved as far as lining up timelines and contractors and responsibilities and material list and design and layout, all of that we could have done so much better before we even bought the house. Like, we could have really hit the ground running on day one.
Yeah. I actually see a lot of the most successful investors I know, flippers at least, like, they're really good at that. Where, like, the day that they close, they've got like nine guys in there working on the project on day one. Where I'm really, like, I'll admit that's one of my weaknesses. I tend to like kind of wait until the last second, and then I buy the property, then I go into it, and I'm like, okay, now what I want to do? Like, I do that mistake all the time. I'm getting better at it, but I'm glad you bring that up, because why waste those 2, 3, 4 weeks ahead before you buy a property? Why not just get in there, get it ready, and hit the ground running?
Well, those are points, right? I mean, you have holding costs in that, especially on a flip, right? So like the time value of money is just getting crushed on that. If you're not ahead of the game, right? It's just that time management piece that's really, really, it's not easy either, right? I mean, I think that's probably from what I understand from the folks who really are good at it. I mean, it's challenging being able to get all that set up, get the right people in, and have it ready to go. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And in fact, you bring up a point where another thing that could have been better is this idea of leveraging money. We legitimately put cash in a pot and bought it and paid for everything with cash. Not once was the cash leveraged, and therefore we were stuck with one deal. 4.5 months goes by, then okay, now let's go and get our next deal. So we were doing one, then the next, then the next, and we didn't leverage any of our capital until about a year later, three deals later.
Good advice.
That's where I would really delve into who's doing this at a high level around you or in BP, because that one piece of advice, or maybe that one individual who could have opened up our eyes. I mean, think about how much more money that we could have made, or how many more houses we could have renovated and provided for for families and stuff like that. Like, I could have learned so much, and I could have been able to share so much more if I wasn't just doing one deal the first year, two and a half the next,
Makes sense.
I think real estate investors, especially newbies, are often guilty, and I'm in this boat as well a lot, is thinking in terms of deal. Okay, I did it. Next deal. And then I did it, rather than thinking pipeline or, like systems and process. Again, like, how do you get that thing just going? And it's not just deal. Okay, well, now what do I do? Okay, I got the house. Okay, now it's rehab. Now what do I do? Sell it. Okay, well, now what do I do? Find another one. And, thinking that way, it takes some, it's like a shift in how we think, but it's vital. So, do you have any recommendations for people that are just getting started today? I mean, like, how can they begin to think more in that way?
Hey, Brandon, really quick before Brandon goes there, I think you nailed it with the word pipeline, I think one of the best tools for something like that is literally getting familiar with like a Gantt chart, right? Being able to literally just have, if you don't know what it is, it's GANTT. And it's literally like this thing that shows timelines of different things. You can have all these different projects, and you just kind of have to figure out where all the different parts come in. It's project management, time management stuff. But for those people interested in learning more, look that up.
Cool. Look at you bringing in the fancy resources.
Yeah, we actually use Gantt charts, and they're very helpful. Even as simple as a shared calendar, an iCalendar or an Outlook calendar, like all of that, to where at least somebody's being held accountable to something on a daily or every other day basis. And that's really important. So I would say, when looking back on that, our next step to accelerate our real estate investing path, like we went from one-off to leveraging debt. And I kind of skipped the hard money and went straight into a guidance line of credit with a local bank where we had $500,000 to kind of do what we want. It was guided, like that's guidance line of credit. Though, you know, it was one of those things where we just kind of sent them the deal and they would tell us how much they'd lend, and we were approved up to $500,000 without them having to go any further for approvals. And then that's where we could do multiple at once.
That's fascinating. I never heard of that before. A guidance line of credit. Yeah. So was that just
what is it?
Yeah.
Exactly. Sure. So it's a guidance line of credit is, for us, we have a local community bank and we were able to finance all of our flips up to the amount that we were pre-approved for. So they looked at us and they pretty much gave us like a $500,000 line of credit. And it's not one that you can use for whatever. Like I can't take it out to go have a nice dinner, although because it's guided, but like, you know, it's going to be, they're going to be in first position with the property and they underwrite it. They can underwrite it in-house, do a desktop, simple appraisal. And it proved really well for us. The downsides of it, now that you've used hard money, private money, cash, guidance line of credit, the downsides of a guidance line of credit, in my opinion, are the fact that you do have to have 25% down.
Okay.
Although it's like 5.5 interest and 1 point.
Nice. So you just explained it and I still don't know what the heck it is. So either I'm old and missing something.
He is old and missing something.
So you said it's guided. Using guided to explain guidance is what is tripping me up here. So who's guiding and what are they guiding and what are they doing? Like I don't think I fully get what that means. Sorry.
Sure. Yeah, no. Sure. So you look at a line of credit, like say I was going to give you a $500,000 line of credit.
Yes, sir.
Well, the difference between a unsecured line of credit and this guidance line of credit is the fact that it is still needs to go through underwriting, get approved. Even though you're approved for 500, each individual property needs to get approved. And that's like their bank's guidance to making sure that you can tap into that 500,000 so that it can be tied into first position and you can get the lending. So we were pre-approved on the front end. It doesn't mean we always get it every single time we want
gotcha.
It. That's where the guidance comes into play.
Okay. I thought it was on things like, oh, they're going to, you know, you say, this is how I'm going to upgrade the bathroom. They're going to guide you and make sure you're going to renovate the bathroom the way you want it, that they agree to. So it's more in they're underwriting the package. But on the individual, you still have to come in and get guidance on each property.
Yeah, it's another way of getting money to renovate the properties. You have hard money and private money. And in fact, I will say if anyone's out there looking to get some sort of guidance line of credit or go to a community local bank and see what options they have as a real estate investor, I would recommend – this is actually something that I've never shared before. Like I never thought it was that important until like last week I was reminded of it. When I was cold calling banks to meet with whoever's in charge of this, whatever they would be able to do with real estate investors, when I went and met with my guy, I brought him sandwiches and something as simple as that, like some small act. I just brought him a Wawa sandwich and he said, you know what? Like you stood out. You came from contribution from day one and yes, you're super young. And yes, we're very concerned with your current personal financials. But you know what? Like you made a lasting impression. And that he said, like he like said like last week to me, he goes, you know what? I still think about that sandwich that day. And you know, if it wasn't for that, I honestly would have forgotten you.
That's awesome. I love that. That's I love really that. Cool. And again, it just goes back to like building relationships. We hear it time and time again here on the show, like build relationships with those bankers. Like they're going to be your good friends going forward. So that's very cool. So. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the partnership thing and that like eventually you decide to go your separate ways. Do you recommend people listening to the show right now trying to get started? Do you recommend that they partner up? Was that a good idea? What are your thoughts on that?
I loved it. I loved everything about it. What I would say is be careful who you get in business with. Yeah. That's not a direct reflection over my business partners. Like we had an amazing time together. I will say though, you should always vet your business partners in the sense of be more scared to get in business with the wrong person than to let the right one go.
How does somebody vet their partners?
Sure. Yeah, I would do it based off of experience, their real estate investing experience. And had I done that, there might have been another partner in the mix, somebody who knew how to leverage money or take us to the next level or create systems and operations. Instead, it was three people with very little to no experience with money and time combination of the two. So I would say that it's a great opportunity for somebody out there who has a lot of money and not a lot of time. And then for you, if you are the person who has a lot of time and not a lot of money, somebody's out there looking for you and vice versa. People need each other. So I think it'd be a great opportunity. I would think though, if your values don't align, your vision doesn't align, and it's better to just cut it off before it gets super ugly, because real estate and having assets and the disillusion of that, it would be a mess.
That's so true. I like that you brought up vision and values. Like those two things, if you don't share the same vision, you don't share the same values, you're always going to struggle in that partnership. So I love that you brought that up. It's like,
thanks. And I would say another thing is if I'm super unclear about what I want to do in life or where I want to go or what is my vision. And though Josh is sitting there sharing his vision, and I'm like, oh wow. I would love to jump on his rocket ship right now. And I could latch on to his vision and we could ride that out together. Yeah. So it doesn't, if you don't have a vision or this idea of where you want to go, that's perfectly fine. Just find someone who does. And if you are in alignment with that, at least right now, then that's really important.
That's cool. I like that. That's a good tip. Yes. So cool. So, okay. So you flipped a bunch of houses. You got 15 some houses. I want to shift a little bit from the flipping and talk a little bit more about the rental side of things. How did you first get into rental properties? Where did that idea come from?
And why?
That's a great question. Flipping started to seem transactional again. For all you flippers out there, you know what I'm talking about, where you do the deal and you get your paycheck and you got to go find another and then get your paycheck and find another. And yet a lot of the most successful people that I know in the industry are in rentals. So I understand they can work hand in hand, generate quicker cash through flipping. Although it was something that I didn't know enough about and that I really wanted to know more about, because it was those guys who were going on the 2-3-4 week vacations every so often and who had reached that financial freedom part. They were all in rentals. So that was when in January of this past year, 2.5 years into being in real estate investing for myself, I jumped into this idea of rentals. And in fact, these 11 units that I have, they were bought as a portfolio. So it was in January, I set up a simple MLS search for multifamily. And because to me, listening in the podcast, I didn't know enough, but I would say that I was interested in saying I own more units than less. So I immediately said, okay, let's do multifamily, the scalability part of it, economies of scale, all that sounded great, but I still didn't have much experience. So we set up an MLS search for multifamily. My business partner and I came across a 3-unit. It looked good. Initial underwriting. So we went out and looked at it. 0 days on market, brand new. We happened to meet the owner there because a listing agent was at a Baltimore Ravens game up in New England. And it worked out to our benefit, because as we're walking through, he said, you know what? I want to move to Florida. I just would love to get rid of everything and move to Florida. And there was motivation. Yeah. So at that moment we said, oh, what is everything? And he said, I have 3 3-units and 2 single-family, all in Baltimore City, spread out. And those I'm going to, one by one, list them, sell them, and deal with each headache one by one. And we said, well, why not sell them all to us in a portfolio? If the deal makes sense. And that's where I joke now, okay, we happen to buy these 11 units and 3 of them were on market and the other 8 were then off market because of one simple question.
Yeah.
And it's that question now that I use every single time I'm calling a listing agent of anything that's on the MLS. I'm just saying, hey, by the way, does your seller have anything else that they'd be willing to sell or they're interested in selling as a portfolio rather than what's listed? And it's an interesting way, as I believe there's a strong strategy to get off market leads from on market leads.
Yeah, I love that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just did a show this morning where the guest,
Austin
had done the same. Austin. Yep. Yeah. He said, look, he found an owner who wanted to move to Florida and, wanted to unload his portfolio. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and he was very, very similar. I asked the guy, does he have anything else? So, it definitely works. I I don't do that. I'm going to start doing that now. Is every time I talk to somebody, do you have anything else? I mean, like I'm a landlord, and right now I'm selling my apartment complex. Possibly, you know, who knows if it'll go through, but selling my apartment complex right now. And like, if that guy would ask me if I had anything else, I'd go through my list and be like, okay, yeah, I'd get rid of that one, that one, that one, and that one, and that one. You know, because like for whatever reason, I just don't want them anymore, or they're maxed out. But he never asked me. I should offer. Anyway. Yeah.
Smart. You know, what's funny is my business partner is named Austin. So I'm pretty sure you weren't talking to him, but yes, Austin and I have the same story.
That's funny. That's funny. Great. Yeah. Well, so, yeah, okay. That's cool.
And these 11 units now, I'd love to talk about the financing.
Yes, sure.
Of those. I think it'd be a really great learning lesson.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So for the financing, went to that same portfolio lender that I went and brought sandwiches to.
Yep.
And it's like the gift that keeps on giving. He is literally my gift that keeps on giving. I'm so grateful for him. And he looked at us. He looked at our personal financials, the deal, and he's loaning a 6-month interest only loan on the front. And then that's going to be, I guess, quote unquote, refinanced himself from that interest only into a 25-year amortization.
That's awesome.
So we're only using the bank. With that, though, we still need 25% down. So we need a down payment 25%.
Yep.
And that's where we raised from friends, no family, we raised the money needed in this deal. So, you know, I look back and I say, okay, these 11 units, once refinanced, it's in the process right now. They were all delivered vacant, another headache in itself. They needed renovations. So that's why the bank said, you know, we'll give you 6-month runway to do what you need to do to get them to income producing, to the debt service coverage ratio that we need of 1.25. And therefore, for simplicity purposes, this refinance is going to get all the money out that we need to pay everybody else back. So we'll have $0 in and infinite cash on cash return. That's and we'll awesome. Have an 11 unit portfolio valued at just under $1 million.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. You said in there, you got it all delivered vacant, and then you said something about how that was a bad thing. I think a lot of investors often see that actually as a good thing, because inheriting tenants can, many, many cases, be an absolute nightmare, and having them vacant, you could just jump in, do what you got to do. But obviously the downside is you don't have any cash coming in on a regular basis, right?
Yeah. I would say, actually, I would agree. It's a great thing. It was a headache, was the term that I used, because when financing, they really didn't want to, zero income producing, literally 100% vacant. Like, they were concerned. So we had to get kind of clever, where I brought in a friend of mine who's W-2 salary, very strong financials. He co-signed on the loan. I paid him to co-sign on the loan. And therefore, we became stronger borrowers, the three of us. And I thought it was a very clever way of getting it financed. And now we're going to refi him off the loan, get our investors their money back, and on to the next one.
Man, I love that. A lot of people look at a deal and they say, I don't have 25% down. I'm going to go back to watching my TV show. Or I don't have 25% down. Maybe I'll do this when I'm older or more rich. I'll get into this. But I love the fact that you looked at this and you're like, you didn't say I can't or whatever. You just, how do I do this? Okay, well, I'm going to go and find this portfolio lender. Okay, well, now I have to have still 25% down. Okay, well, I'm going to bring in a partner. You figured it out. And I think that's the truth about creative financing, like, all in a nutshell, is you just figure it out and you just keep opening doors until you find one that opens, and you'll keep turning the handle and you figure it out. So, yeah, nice job.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, looking back, during the process, we weren't like, oh, we're going to do this, then that, and it's going to work out this way, and then we're going to be great. During it was like, oh, crap.
Yep.
We're not strong borrowers. Now what? Oh, okay. We need to go find somebody who has a W-2. Looking back on it, it sounds like we had it all figured out. In the process, we didn't. So to your point, it was, how can we? Because you hear this fancy thing, well, if you have the deal, then you get the dollars, or, that's where it comes down to. Well, you know what? In fact, we had the deal. We didn't have the money. I mean, we didn't have $180,000. We had to raise that between the two of us, and just for the down payment. So we figured it out. We didn't have the money.
That's great. Well, I'm one of the guys guilty of saying, if you have the deal, you're going to find the dollars. You wouldn't have gotten $180,000 if you didn't have the deal, though. Right.
So, I'm saying, I agree with that.
Oh, okay.
That's a perfect example. Yeah. Oh, okay. It's a perfect example of it.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, so question, you said we, I know you brought your buddy in for, to help you scrap up on that, on the credit and everything. Who's your partner on this? I know you've started to go on your own on the, I think you said that on the flipping side. Who are you in, quote unquote, in bed with now on the buy and hold side?
His name is Austin Carroll, a really great friend of mine. And this is a one-off. It's not like a partnership where we're exclusive. This was something that he had experience. Again, you vet that business partner. He has multifamily. He's a hard worker. He has access to capital. And I brought my lending relationships. And together we, you know, we made it work. And we may get more together one day. We may not. That remains to be seen. But, you know, I couldn't be happier with him and our self-managing these 11 together.
So yeah. Did you and he partner prior to finding this package, or did you find the package and say, you know, I'm going to need some help on this. Let me find, I know this dude. Let's get together on this. How did that work out?
Yeah, sure. We were actually together and he was showing me what to do on the MLS, like to go through the multifamily and how you can, you know, set up those searches and track those and how to underwrite deals. And as an example, this happened to be one of the few that we were underwriting and it was 0 days on market and it worked out perfectly. And I think the greatest lesson in this is simply to, even to your point, Brandon, it's asking more deeper questions of, you know, instead of, oh, we can't do this, it's how can we? At the same time, it's, oh, there's three units. Maybe there are more. Maybe there's a way to make this deal sweeter. So it's asking everyone as many questions as you can, because it just takes one stone to turn over that could literally make or break a deal.
Yeah. I love that.
So where's that deal now, that 11 unit? What are the numbers? Where's the property and what's the plan? Property.
Yep. So there's 11 units. We got three units, two single family spread out through Baltimore City. And as far as the numbers, bought it for $423,000. And the valuation on the back end that is now through the refinance process, it is right around like $880,000.
Wow.
So therefore, if you just look at it from those two numbers, that was the forced appreciation through the renovations and the filling of the units. So we have 9 of the 11 units currently filled, which is enough for us to go through the refinance process. And that's where we are today. And now once they're stabilized, again, infinite cash on cash return, because we don't have any money in the deal.
Yep.
And when you just look at the concrete financials, the first year after we're putting aside our money for our repairs, we do 10%. For our future repairs, even though it's fully renovated, we're looking at a $40,000 to $44,000 a year, all said and done.
Wow.
Depending on what goes wrong, but we're self-managing, so that helps too.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's cool. Well, congratulations on that. I mean, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. That's great. Hey, you use the word stabilized. I know we use that word a lot, and I don't think I often ask the question. What do you mean by that? Like once the rents are stabilized.
Yeah. So once the units are stabilized, in the sense of the value add that we were able to perform to make this deal a more attractive deal as a portfolio was renovations and adding in tenants. So in this form, in this specific example, stabilized would be once we have the renovations and we have the tenants in there and we're bringing in rent, then at that moment, they're considered stabilized. We've completed our value add play and now the bank will lend on the property as it is in the stabilized form, renovated and you have income producing.
Awesome.
Your competitors are fighting for your customers' attention. So how do you stand out? Easy, Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Reach new audiences, grow your customer list, sell more, raise more, and fast-track your growth. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business through email and SMS marketing, social media, and even events management. Don't know much about marketing? Don't sweat it, because Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. And with my boot camps and live events, I just don't have the time to clone myself. So I just let Constant Contact do the marketing for me, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com. You're ready to open a business bank account for your new property. You know what that means? Coordinating a time between you, your co-founders, and your bank consultant. Waiting at the branch or waiting for hours on the support line. Who has time for that? With Relay, you can open a business bank account for your property 100% online from anywhere. Create up to 20 accounts to organize money by property or by categories like expenses, taxes, or investments. Effortlessly collaborate with role-specific access. That means giving your cleaner a debit card for cleaning supplies or your accountant read-only access to your transactions. Own multiple businesses? Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access them all from one centralized login. Okay, I'm going off script here. That is cool. It's annoying that I have to log into 10 business accounts with my current bank. So go sign up for RelayFi because that's a feature that I like. No monthly fees or minimums, and it takes just 10 minutes to sign up. Head on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets for stress-free banking. You can join me because I'm heading on over there right now. I'm heading on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets. Relay is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Thread Bank, member FDIC. The Relay Visa debit card is issued by Thread Bank pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc. and may be used everywhere Visa debit cards are accepted.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to DealMachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at DealMachine.com/BP.
Yeah. So one thing in the story, I always want to be as relatable as possible. I had a full-time job with Department of Defense, and I was doing accounting for 5 years with them. And I did it through college, and leaving them to go real estate investing, like that's a very popular thing nowadays, either in one's mind or one's actually doing it. Would you love to delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, please. I mean, like do you want
to take over? I mean, should we leave? I mean, you want to just ask yourself questions? I mean, what are we doing here?
It's good. It's good.
No, I don't want to delve into it. I got some other stuff I want to talk about. What are we doing? Brandon, anything you want to get this guy?
This is exactly where I want to go, because here's the deal. Most of our listeners.
All right, let's do it. We had nothing else to talk about. Nothing. I was just kind of biding my time, waiting for you to go.
But, sure. Are you done talking yet, Josh? Are you done?
I miss being chatty.
You miss being chatty. Well, okay. So most of our listeners are people who have full-time jobs, and most of them want to get out of said full-time job. So let's talk about that. I mean, how did you make that transition, and just tell us about that experience a little bit?
Sure. Love to. While I was there inside of my accounting job at the government, even though it was only part-time for the 5 years I was there through school, I was then asked to come full-time once I graduated. And in those years, like, I'm one of those people who I got the real estate investing bug while working there, and I just wanted out. Because, in fact, I would listen to my coworkers say they would legitimately count down how many years they have left. And to me, if you're in a job
thing.
Yeah, when you're in a job where you're counting down how many years you have left, then that's never a good sign.
That's never good, yeah.
And, I was already guilty of it. I was like, all right, I have 28 more years, which is a long time. So, yeah, the pension thing. So people were also talking about, well, we get this great pension. And when you truly understand real estate investing, you can say, okay, well, I only need a handful of rental properties in the next 30 years to pay me what my pension was going to pay me.
Yep.
And in that journey, I mean, think about the people you can meet, and you'll actually have assets that you could pass down for generations, or the gift that can pay you now rather than waiting until you retire. So I'm not going to sit here and say, you know what, I had this idea of leaving my job and I did it and everything's been great. No, not at all. That's not at all what happened. What happened was I wanted to leave, and I was one of those guilty people who just wouldn't leave until somebody asked me, what are you fighting for? And I'm like, what? And like, in this life, like, what are you fighting for? Like, what's your purpose, your cause? And I'm never a huge fan of the airy fairy conversations. So I didn't even have an answer. And they said, well, you know what? Who are you fighting for? And I said, well, I can tell you what, I have an amazing niece, an amazing nephew, 4 years old, 4 year old niece, 2 year old nephew, both for two completely different reasons were born as preemies. My niece was born 10 weeks early at just over 3 pounds. My nephew was born 14 weeks early, micro preemie at just over 1 pound. Wow. And I said, you know what, who would I be if I didn't leave my job and follow my passions, when I'm going to sit there when they're growing up and say, you know what, like, you two are so blessed to be on this earth because you have died and came back to life so many times already that I would want them to follow their passions too. So I wanted to be an example for them. And I think that was more of just in general, like, be an example for everyone of saying, you know what, I want to follow my passions. So might as well get off my butt and do it, because I don't want to be just another one of those people who talk about it for years and years and years. Yeah. So it was a couple steps back financially for sure.
Hey, so you raised something really, I think that stops a lot of people. It's that pension thing. I think, well, there's no thinking here. I mean, I know a lot of people who are staying in jobs that they hate. I know a lot of people who, you know, whether it's the government or education, those tend to be the fields that the people that I know that are in jobs that they dislike are staying in because of pensions. And I love your logic. I actually, ironically, I never even thought about it from that angle. And it's really smart. It's, you know, look, if you're that unhappy that you're counting down the clock on the next 10 years, 15 years, 20, whatever it is, right? There's got to be some kind of alternative where you can, you know, figure this stuff out. For you, it was real estate, right? Like, hey, if I can go and deploy my intelligence, find some resources and put it out there, you know, I can replace that pension with income from rental properties. And then I got to go replace my salary. Okay. But like, it can be done. You just got to kind of think it over, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I look at these 11 units. We just went through the example in the first year alone, where, you know, that we don't have any quote unquote debt pay down. We are still putting lots of money aside, our 10% for our future repairs. Like, even this, like, right now, like, in theory, based on pro forma, I personally should bring in close to $20,000 to $22,000 this year on that.
Wow.
Well, that's, I mean, that right there, I mean, sure. I mean, they're maybe not all that sweet, or maybe some are sweeter than that, but that right there is like, I don't know, a third of the pension that I would have received for the rest of my life. And here we are a year and a half out of the government job. And
I can already start, right?
Yeah, well, I look like that. And you know what's funny is I can start paying. I mean, it's like you're collecting your pension early and you're building up so you have a larger pension. And like, it's one of those things where I was talking to a friend on the phone who still works inside the government, and nothing, no disrespect to the government or anybody inside of it. You know, it's all based on our own passions and strengths and so on and so forth. But I was talking to him and he was like, I said, what time is it? And he says, it's 4 o'clock. Can his day go by any slower? And I'm like, holy crap, it's 4 o'clock already. Like, where did the day go?
Yeah.
And to me, that simple distinction between how our days are flying by or lack thereof is a telling time in itself. Yep. It's like that first 5 seconds the alarm clock goes off in the morning. It's like, what are you thinking? Crap, I want to keep sleeping, or like, I'm pumped to get up, or like, me.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. Like, I mean, especially like, yeah, I mean, if you ask yourself at 5 a.m. when that alarm goes off, or 6 a.m. or whatever, like, if you're unhappy, well, there's a famous quote about that. It's like, when I wake up,
we talked about this with Hal
Elrod. Yeah, maybe that's where it came up. But it was like, if you wake up too many days in a row not excited to jump out of bed, you need to change something dramatically.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was
That sounds like hell.
Yeah. And so Anyway, I think
we're talking about Hal Elrod to anybody who's listening. Yeah. And I don't know what show number it was, but if you look up Bigger Pockets podcast, Hal Elrod, phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, life-changing and motivating show all about Miracle Morning. But sorry, anyway, I digress.
Yeah. Anyway, I love that. You know, people will work the same job that they hate forever and talk about leaving forever. But the fact that you did it, I love that at a young age, like you didn't have millions of dollars in the bank. At least I don't think so. Like to be able to quit, but you followed your passion. And I think that's a lesson that anybody can learn from today's show.
Thanks. Yeah. I left the salary on the table. I restarted with real estate investing as like, you know what, I actually have to do it now to have food on the table. So it was a step, multiple steps backwards, with the intent of making so many leaps forward. And I'm all for that. One thing that I'm a big Gary Vaynerchuk fan. Yeah. Gary V. I don't know if you guys are big Gary V fans.
I love Gary V.
He's got some energy. The guy's got some energy. He can be overpowering at times, but yeah, he does it right.
Yeah. And he's one of the most genuine people I've ever met. I had the pleasure of having him out for an event, for the Reckon, long story. And I'll say one of his pieces of content I think is extremely valuable to reiterate, especially in this moment right now, we talk about people leaving their jobs, is no matter what age you are or what you're doing, no matter if you're going from 100 real estate flips to 200, the importance of documenting and documenting that journey. Like this podcast right here is like a moment in time of documenting how we got here and then continuing to do so. I know when you have guests on multiple times, it's so fascinating to see the growth and one's mindset. So now actually something I've never shared. I swear I've never shared this. What I do is I take 60-second videos once a week on Sundays of me just venting into my phone, and I save them and I keep them private because I will not share the raw, authentic version if I'm posting it. You know, it's just natural instinct to be political. So I wanted to give myself a 60-second snapshot of my week, the good, the bad, the ugly. And at the end of the year, I mean, think about it. You can watch your entire year in weekly live recaps in an hour.
That's cool.
And that's just another way of documenting.
That is cool. That is really cool.
Yeah, I never heard of anybody doing that before, but I think that's a very neat idea. And by the way,
funny,
go ahead.
You're never like, you're just never like, oh, this was a great week. I had so much fun. It's always like always about the bad stuff. Yeah. And in the moment of time, it seems to be such an issue. Yet I'm sure at the end of the year, I look back and I'll be like, why did I get so upset? No big deal.
That's funny. That's interesting. Yeah. By the way, to jump back to the Gary Vaynerchuk thing, I just want to, we don't, probably don't have time to go in the whole story, but I heard this from you back when we met in person. Gary Vaynerchuk, for those people who don't know, he's got a big podcast that's probably just as big as the Bigger Pockets podcast. He's super motivating, all about business and hustle and all this. He wrote the book, Crush It. Was his first big book. And then he wrote a few other ones after that that are all great. But anyway, Brenton here, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to summarize your story here. You basically invited him out to speak at this event, this Reckon, this event without having the funds to pay for him or something like that. You just like, you invited him out. Yeah. And it was a massive amount of money. Can you give us a summary
This seems to be a pattern in my life. Like you get to 11 units with no money and like, oh crap, now what? It's like finding the deal, then the dollars. So, with this event, my network, I started three university real estate clubs, three different ones heading the senior year of college. Cause I hadn't met anybody that I knew I'd be in business with. In fact, I always talk about, I always seen college as, or any big area, like any, big place, like your job, and say like college has 23,000 individuals. Like those are 23,000 potential business partners, 23,000 potential clients or leads, data you can collect. So I didn't catch on to that till I was leaving college, but I started these real estate clubs. After college, I just took my network called Reckon of people just passionate about funding their life's purpose in real estate investing. And we were like, you know, how cool would it be that we would bring out the guy that we look up to, Gary V, out to an event? Like, okay, great. So we booked him, never asked how much until we were like, you know what? He's on a book tour. We got him at a discount. And I'll just tell you, like, it was 3,000 books we had to buy. So we bought 3,000 books to get him out to speak. Then we saw, you know, how cool it would be to have David Osborne to come speak right before him. And David, Bigger Pockets podcast guest.
Yep.
David's an incredible wealth-building entrepreneur. And we booked him. And then we're like, oh, how cool would it be to be at the Xfinity Center, which is the main basketball gym at University of Maryland. Okay, cool. Let's book that. Then we looked at it and like, oh, we don't have any money. And like now we're $75,000 in the hole with 2.5 months to go. And people were like, you know, when are you buying the books? When are you putting down your deposit? And my rec and team, we just hustled like no other with, and we have such great relationships with businesses. And long story short, we came up a few thousand dollars short, although it just goes to show exactly like in real estate investing, where if you just go out and you want it so badly, like it'll somehow, some way, somebody will come in your life or you'll figure it out and it'll happen. Just go after and do it, because right now Gary is like $100,000 for 45-minute keynote. And we got him for 3,000 books, which is right around like 55K.
Wow. First of all, that's so much money for keynoting. Man, I got to get into keynoting. But
and by the way, Brandon Turner, do you notice that Brenton Hess at no point was like, you know, God, I got to get Brandon Turner. God, I got to get Josh Dorkin. I'm just saying, there's no need to respond. Just ponder that.
Hey, by the way, this show is over.
Let's just say that.
Maybe someday Josh Dorkin will get the invite to, share the stage.
I always assumed he was just too expensive.
He is far too expensive. Josh is like 250 grand for
it. I'm certainly more than Gary Vee, right? You've got to buy a 250,000 book, Bigger Pockets books, and we'll be good, okay?
No, but that actually is not a bad idea. Next time either Josh or me writes a book, we should do, you buy 3,000 books, we'll come speak at your event. We're putting that into writing right now. All right, So anyway, I love that story because of it just shows like, it's like jumping off. What's the analogy? Like jumping out of a plane and building your parachute on the way down. Like I like that mentality. I mean, there's a way to MacGyvering do it stupid. What?
MacGyvering it?
Yeah. You figure it out and you fall down. And if you don't figure it out, you die. But like, I mean, there's a way to do that stupid and there's a way to do that smart. And I think you've done it very smart. I think you've done good deals, real estate deals. And you found ways to figure it out. I mean, that's what creative real estate investing is all about.
Thanks. And I think it comes down to just relationships. So, fortunately I've made money on all of the real estate deals and that is the intent moving forward. I will say though, if it wasn't for a lot of key people in my life, I can't say that would have been possible. And I'm just, grateful for the community such as BP and the mentors, peer mentors, accountability, people looking up to you. And I mentor people all the time who wanted to go to my level of success when I see myself as the infant stages of where I want to be. So like others mentor me. It's just this one big world of giving. And I'm always like, I answer everybody who ever contacts me. And I'm always like there to help however I can. And if I don't know something, then I'll try to find somebody who does.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. So before we move forward onto the fire round, what are you doing here? Right. I mean, like you quit your job at the DOD, you started doing all this flipping. Now you've got this portfolio, you're making moves. You're a young guy. Is this like, hey, I'm going to, I want to be a billionaire. I want to, what are you aspiring to actually create with this business? From somebody like you, I know you've thought this over. So what's the end goal?
I appreciate that. My end goal is to make a generational impact through real estate investing as the vehicle. So that's the airy fairy version of how much can I learn? How many people can I meet? And to me, I go back to my niece and nephew. I've always seen that those who are younger, I mean, if you look at time's a finite resource.
Yes.
So in theory, those who are younger should have more time than those who are older to make an even bigger impact. So if we all continue to, again, all boats rise with the same BP tide, if we can all rise our tides, rise our boats, and then pour into the future generations so that they can pour into the future generations, then we'll be able to make the biggest impact possible. So I keep looking at this. I'm like, well, how can I pour into others? Well, I need to go out and learn. I need to go out and meet people. So that's where the airy fairy version of this, the more concrete answer, Josh, is I've learned that he or she who controls the deal flow is the winner in this game. And I've learned the hard way that I don't control my deal flow. I spend a lot of time and energy submitting a lot of offers on the MLS, waiting to get bites, going out and looking at them, getting creative on how I can make them work. I have an amazing, real estate agent who helps me inside of that. But right now I'm building out the off-market lead gen with my coaches, following models out there. I've sent out over 7,000 mailers, and I have closed on zero of those deals. I put up over 300 signs. I've closed on zero of those deals. And it's a lack of consistency. It's a lack of, probably so many other things. And right now it's that time to get back to, okay, how can we get this to where I'm controlling the deal flow? So I just bought 6 months of distribution and stamps for mailers. So I've already paid for it. So at this point it's going out. They have my mailing schedule. So every other week I have mailers going out now. And getting back to those basics, building in from the ground up, because I've been through multiple partnerships and I'm still young. And at this point, if I want to get to where I need to go, I need to control the deals.
Yep. Yeah.
So to me, yeah, what I hear you saying, you're not saying, hey, I want to buy 10 or 20 properties. You're saying I want to build something really scalable. I want to build something big. I'm thinking big, to Brandon's word, pipeline. I'm trying to create a pipeline where, the deals are coming in. I'm jumping on them effectively. Obviously, thus far you've been testing it and it sounds like your precision effectiveness, right? But you'll get there. And so you want to go as big as you can go, impact as many people as you can, and just, become a big star.
Yeah. I'm all for bigger the better. So as big as we can get this to be. And I admire people, your former guests like Andrew Cushman, who has thousands of units that he's syndicated and he can do it from wherever. And you're dealing with the more larger economies of scale. And we got to get there somehow, some way. Right now it's get the food on the table, and it's to do it where you have systems, you have operations, you have deal flow. You're doing what everyone else successful is doing, and then get creative. So I'm right now, life is boring because I'm not being creative. I'm just doing what others are doing. Mattie A. Aitchinson is a direct mentor of mine, and I'm following a lot of what he's doing. It's just other people have it out there and they're right on the community. They've been on the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Both Matt and David Osborne have both been on the podcast. And Hal Elrod, we talked about earlier, has been on the podcast.
Andrew Cushman.
Yeah. I was actually just surfing with Andrew Cushman last weekend down in San Diego. We were talking apartment complex investing. Yeah. It was amazing. Good guy. And also Tim Gordon. I was hanging out with Tim Gordon surfing, and he was also on the podcast. Man, it's like my world is podcast guests now. This is great.
Seems that way. Huh?
Anyway. Yeah. All right. So awesome. This was fantastic. You. Brenton, I love your story. I can't wait to see you kind of where you're headed the next few years. We want to get to today's fire round.
Fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
All right. These questions come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, and they are quick fire and respond. I don't know how
to say
that.
Wow. This is a shocking list of fire round questions.
I know.
Brandon.
What, huh? No, they're
there.
Look up.
They're all quick.
They are quick. All right. Number one, which mortgage should I pay off first, a rental property or my own?
What if your answer is none? Okay. So I've always seen as debt, just look at the interest rate you're paying on your debt. And if you can make more than that interest rate, reinvesting that extra money somewhere else, then go for it. If you can refinance it at, I don't know, what, 4.25, 5.25, and you can go make a higher cash on cash return somewhere else, then you go do that. So I would say you just evaluate the interest rate and that'll give you your answer.
All right.
Fair enough. Cool. Should I use credit cards to fund my real estate renovations?
Again, to interest rate, if you look at how much of your credit card is going to be charging you in interest, and if you can get money cheaper, like, hey, mom, or hey, buddy, like I'll pay you 10%. And can you give me like 10 grand real quick? Then that would be a better option than paying 17% on your credit card or 24%. So I would say, again, it comes down to financial analysis through your interest rate.
Fair enough.
All right. Next one. Would you invest in an area where the population is declining?
I would, from that standpoint, I would not, although it does come down to the numbers. Like, what is your cash on cash return? Okay. Is it still, if it's something that's infinite cash on cash and it's a stabilized asset, and even though the population's declining, at what rate? Is it, a 0.5%? A quarter of a percent a year. So there are so many variables in that question. Although I would say a good deal is a good deal no matter where. But generally speaking, if you have apples to apples and one population is declining and the other is not, I would choose the population that is not declining.
Yeah. All right. And I would just warn to that over with some age here that, you know, to your point, if it's like a quarter of a point, okay. But, you know, like when a population really starts to decline and industry and jobs start to leave, I would heed caution to anyone, to your words, because, you know, a great deal is a great deal, except when there's nobody to fill it. So, just, you know, be careful. That's all.
Yeah. And it's definitely a so many other variables and loaded question. And one thing to be clear, like Josh, you bring up a great point, is we all have, you know, we all have our own strengths and our own lane. And, you know, I actually am a very big fan of being cautious about giving anybody any advice. Like the term, if I were you or if I was you, like a mentor once said to me, like he said to never say that because you actually may be slowing somebody else down because they might have more resources than you or more money or more or experience. They might know more than you. So don't ever put yourself in their position. Don't ever speak in absolutes. Just say, this is what I would do based on my resources, my strengths, where I am, my knowledge. Because, you know, by far, like even the two of you, I mean, just so many light years ahead of me and how smart you are. And that's, you know, that's why the community looks up to you. So I appreciate that, Josh, for bringing that up.
And what you just said was fantastic advice. And in fact, I hold the same standard to myself. Like I rarely do I give advice. I may present a landscape. Here's what are your options? What do you think they are? And how do those options impact you in many ways? Or, hey, you may want to talk to somebody else. Like I'm never going to kind of say, you know, here's an absolute answer, unless it's like, this is a universal absolute that isn't going to depend upon any variables, age, time, risk tolerance, you know, things like that, because you can't make those decisions for people for your reasons and many others. So great. I love that. I love that. And somebody your age being so far ahead on that, that's amazing. It's amazing.
Thanks. So, I appreciate it.
You got it. Last question. How can I avoid the mistakes that you made?
Listen to this podcast episode. Hit me up. Ask me more about my questions my mistakes that I've made. I'm a big fan of, if you haven't realized it, of instead of being entrepreneurial in our ways and being creative in how we find deals or how we renovate properties, there's so many people out there smarter than us. Success leaves clues. Just go out there and talk to others who have made similar mistakes or who are doing it at a higher level and just ask them what to do. Become more purposeful. Don't be so entrepreneurial and creative. And I've built my life around that the hard way of like, go out, do things on my own. That's why I have 7,000 mailers and zero deals because I was doing it Brenton's way, not a proven way.
Yeah. I love that, man. Success leaves clues. That's quotable, first of all. And you're right. And I've done a lot of that too. Looking back upon this career and other jobs I've done, you know, it's always like, hey, I've got a better idea. Well, it might be, but you know, if you had kind of gone the easy road and then modified it to your liking, you might have been more successful more quickly. At least, not, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying you for me. Mm-hmm. It might be the same for you, but yeah.
Love it.
Very true. All right. Well, let's conclude this thing with a famous four.
Famous four.
All right. The famous four. These are the same four questions we ask every guest every week. Number one, what's your favorite real estate book?
I know this gets said a lot. There's a reason why Millionaire Real Estate Investor by the one and only Gary Keller. I've fortunately been in very small rooms with Gary. I've been mentored from afar and from close, been inside of his world. And, you know, I really appreciate all of what he has to bring to the table. And I would abide by that. Another one that's just a lot less common, I would say, is How to Make Big Money in Small Apartments by Lance Edwards.
Oh, I haven't read that.
I don't know if you guys have read that. How to Make Big Money in Small Apartments. I got a ton of nuggets out of that.
Cool.
All right, next question. Favorite business book, non-real estate?
Change Your Habits, Change Your Life by Tom Corley. I, you know, when I read books, I take notes in my phone on Evernote. That, because one time somebody said, did you read the Seven Habits of Highly Successful People? And I was like, I did. And they go, well, what were the seven habits? And I was like, I don't remember. So ever since then, I realized you got to take notes or you'll forget. And I had the most amount of nuggets taken away from that book than all the other books I've read. And one that stands out was that the You can legitimately change one's DNA through changing their habits. And if you can change your DNA, then like that is you impacting, positively impacting your children. So I can change my children's, like my gene pool passed down to my children's by changing my own habits. Like there's some scientific method to it. And that just shows the power of habits, I would say.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Sorry, Rosie.
Poor little girl.
Brandon's daughter. Yeah.
All right. Number three.
Number three. Yeah. Hobbies. What do you do for fun, man? What is it that drives you outside of real estate to get out there?
Sure. Sports, playing and watching just about every sport. My community of Reckon, my family, as you can see, like I'm a passionate uncle. And you'll hear me talk about my niece and nephew a lot. I love them to death and my whole family. So, and I see like business partners as family, mentors, like just people.
Cool.
Cool. I love it. All right. Last question. What do you believe sets apart successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Through this whole podcast episode, I'm sure it's very apparent that I'm very passionate about the success leaves clues and that so many people out there have done it before us. They're smarter than us. And that we mentorship in some form or fashion. Like you can be mentored by Warren Buffett through one of his books.
Yeah.
So go out there. And I think that if you want to be the most successful person that you can be, is then go find somebody out there who has done what you want to do. And then just go ahead and model them and then get creative when you've reached their level of success.
Nice. Awesome. All right. So before we let you go, I know you two have been doing this little underground language about this conference of yours. Where can people find out about you? What do you have to plug? Anything like that?
Yeah. We're having an awesome event. By the way, it's my Reckon community.
What is
neither here nor well, Reckon is, so I started those university clubs and then, kind of got kicked out and I just took like, you know, this awesome group of people who are passionate about investing and funding their life purpose through there. Like, and you know, we're doing like, we're having these incredible events with, speakers, Gary Vee, David Osborne, and so many others. Just go reckon.com, GOrecn.com. You know, I'm just, you know, really grateful to be on this podcast. And I would say the best place that anybody could reach me is Facebook Messenger or Instagram Messenger. Everything is just Brenton Hess, my first name, last name.
Nice. And we'll link to that in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show240. So is the audience for this Reckon thing like college age kids? Is that kind of the thing?
It was at one point. Then we realized that we were actually holding a lot of people back who could get a ton of value out of. So no, any age, anyone. At this point, we just want to bring awesome people together and be able to grow as a community. And cool. That's where we're at right now.
Hey, Brandon, just keep in mind, he doesn't yet have the money to pay you. But anyway, so
my $75,000. Hey,
every joke.
Yeah. All right.
Buy the books. Yeah. I don't care which ones. Buy them. Hey, Brenton, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This is great. You're inspirational. I love hearing from guys your age who are out there killing it. So congrats on all your success so far. Continued success to you. And it's a pleasure to get to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to maybe potentially coming back one day and updating, because I feel like it's a very interesting time in life. And, you know, I'm excited to see where it all goes. So thank you so much for what you guys have done for the community and what you continue to do.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you. All right, appreciate man. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, guys, that was Brenton Hess.
That it was.
Big thanks to Brenton.
Yeah, I like that guy.
For coming on the show.
He's a good guy.
It was a really good show.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Enjoyed it.
Are you going to let me talk at all?
This is fantastic.
What's your problem?
What are you doing?
I don't know. Josh is clearly a little bit intoxicated today on today's show. And, you know, maybe you were like taking a shot every time I said or something.
I wasn't offended by your cutoff in the beginning of the show at all.
Oh, I'm sure you weren't. So, Josh, besides today being an awesome show, you know what else I did today? I told you this earlier, but I'm going to tell everyone else.
Is this where you saw like a buffalo sleeping in your back?
It wasn't a buffalo. No, but it was so I'm taking a walk in the cemetery because that's what I do for fun. And
yeah, by the way, let's pause
weird?
There.
Is that weird?
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, the co-host of the Bigger Pockets podcast likes to creep through cemeteries night.
It was daytime.
Someone to hang out with.
There's a nice cemetery near my house. It's like right near my house. And so it's the perfect place to go walk in the morning. So I'm walking around and I look down and there's this gigantic black creature. And my first thought was, there's a bear, I'm going to die. Because it was like a foot from me. It was like, I didn't see it until I was there. And then I realized it wasn't a bear. And then I thought it was a buffalo. And I'm like, wait, there are no buffalo in Washington. And then I realized it was a cow, a massive cow, somehow escaped somewhere and ended up in the cemetery. So we hung out for a while. Anyway, weird.
That all right. It is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Podunk, Washington.
Yeah, I keep walking those cemeteries, man.
Yeah, that's, I will. Just,
I don't know. If you also walk the cemeteries, let us know. You can tell us on the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show40. If you think it's absolutely really disturbing and weird,
that's so good.
Jump on Twitter and troll Brandon, Brandon at BP, and let him know how weird it is to stroll through the cemeteries and steal flowers Thank from you. People's gravestones.
By the way, I have to say something about Twitter since you brought that up, and then I'm going to leave you because I'm late for lunch with a Bigger Pockets member. But you, a long time ago, got verified on Twitter, and I was so jealous that Josh got verified.
Did well, you guess, just get verified?
Guess who's got two thumbs and just got verified? This guy right here. So I'm legit now. People can't.
Did you apply months and months ago and just get it?
I applied three times. All right.
Let's not
dwell on that. But the fact is, wow. I am now verified.
So I applied and they did it right away.
Oh wow!
So,
you know, that's because you you know have a higher likelihood of getting like ripped off, or maybe they're like, we want to make sure that this person stands out from Adam Levine because you guys are like twins. Maybe that's why.
Thank you. I think that was a compliment, but yeah.
Was it? I don't know. Have you seen his hair?
All right, man. Hey, great show, Brandon. Thank you, Brenton. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, seriously, guys. Thank you so much for listening to the show, and let's get out of here. All right. I'm Josh Dorkin,
and I'm Brandon.
This is Brandon Turner.
Signing off.
You didn't think I was going to do that?
Sign it off. I beat you to it.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The random five. These are the random questions. We just want to get to know you a little bit better, Brenton. So, number one, do you like spicy food?
No, not really.
Okay. No one's perfect.
All right. It's my personality, I guess.
Nice. What's your favorite board game?
My favorite board game is Catan. C-A-T-A-N. Oh,
Settlers of Catan.
I never played it, but yeah, I heard good.
I've never played it. I've heard of it.
No. Yeah, super nerdy. It's awesome. Like collect resources and build out roads and settlements. It's
sounds super like nerdy. Civilization or something, or colonization.
Yeah, yeah. I should be careful, like telling everybody that's like my favorite board game. It's so nerdy. It's awesome though.
Yeah,
it's all good, man.
I do want to play it someday. Maybe you and I will play it together someday. So, next question: do you know any magic tricks?
No, I can juggle. I know it's not magic, but that's about good. As creative as it gets.
There you go.
I can juggle like anything. Like I'm in the stores all the time grabbing three random items that's and throwing awesome. Them up until somebody acknowledges me.
That's awesome.
Sweet. All right. What foreign language would you most like to learn and why?
I would love to learn Spanish because my niece and nephew are half Hispanic. Yeah. My brother-in-law, he can speak fluently, but he's been born and raised in the States. And I would say like, you know, I look at them and they speak Spanish to them and I don't know what they're saying. Yeah. So it would be great to understand like my own family communicating. Otherwise I just assume they're talking about me.
It's a good reason. It's a good reason. Nice. Nice.
All right. Should there be an age limit for trick or treating?
Age limit for trick or treating? No, definitely not. In fact, you know, I heard of the greatest trick or treating idea of all time.
What's that?
Ever heard of a trunk or treat?
I don't think so.
Trunk or treat. It's like this thing where I've heard communities that maybe are very spread out. They all like get in their cars and they drive to like a parking lot and they all park in like a circle or in a one big line and you open up the trunks and then you can give out candy that way. So therefore kids don't have to walk as far. It's quicker. You get more candy and you see more people. So, nice. I would say like, you know, that atmosphere, the parents could like maybe have a drink or two and hang out and not drive home and Uber home and the kids could have fun.
Leave their cars in the parking lot. I don't know. We gotta think this through a little bit more. Trunk or treat. Fascinating. Nice. All right. Last question. Would you clone yourself if you had the chance?
And why? I don't think the world is ready for two Brents and Hesses. So it's interesting. I would love for my wife, my future wife, whoever that may be, to be, you know, the better parts of me. So I would say, no, I would not clone me. Although I would say, you know, there are some good attributes that I would like to pass on to somebody. So kids or I pick up in others.
All right.
Would you guys clone yourselves?
I don't think I would. I think it'd be creepy.
I haven't thought it through.
Be a good business partner. I would trust myself.
That's, so
I'd be good.
No, you know, I would, oh, for business, as I much guess. As you think it would be a good business partner, you got to stop and
you don't know Josh.
Who you are.
You don't know Josh.
I would be a horrible business partner. We would murder each other. Absolutely kill each other. I don't think that would work well for me, but maybe so the cloning thing. Well, you know, I'd be home with my wife and kids and hanging out and spending time here. Maybe it would work. Maybe. If they shared one brain, maybe. Two bodies, one brain. I don't know.
I'm getting out of here. Thank you guys so much. This was fun.
All right.
Yeah, I had a blast. If there's anything I can do for you guys, let me know.
Thank you. All right, take care.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
BiggerPockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.